This is a CBC original podcast.
When I got back to the CBC, I was trying to write my story, and I thought about my family. And then I felt like I needed to call somebody. I needed to talk to somebody. I needed to get some kind of support. I was in the Ottawa newsroom, which is not my normal newsroom, so I didn't know very many people very well there. And I called my partner, but he couldn't answer the phone or whatever, and I was at my desk, and I didn't have any time to be on the phone, but I felt like this huge lump in my throat, and I just wanted to talk to somebody from home. So I called my brother, and I just said, I'm here, and this is a hard thing to do. This has been a tough day. It wasn't really a remarkable conversation, except that I felt like I had to talk to family. And I did, and I spoke to him, and then I hung up the phone, and I finished writing my story, and we filed for the National that night, and it was great. It was, you know, there was, you know, it just felt like even though I was by myself in Ottawa, you know, at the end of that night, that I was connected with people who were all probably feeling the same things that I was feeling that night.
And my life will never be the same.
But let me start at the beginning.
Because of all the trauma and terror I experienced in that school system.
I'm Connie Walker, and this is Backstory, Canada's residential school system.
What's happened historically is residential school took their identity away.
I remember the abuse, the straps, slaps across the head. But I think the most pain I felt was the pain that I felt leaving my parents.
I couldn't at the time believe that in my country that such a thing happened.
A child at 7 years old shouldn't have gone through what I went through.
Reconciliation is not an Aboriginal problem. It is a Canadian problem. It involves all of us.
So I think the goal of residential schools was assimilation, aggressive assimilation. They, you know, they felt that the best thing to do would be to integrate Aboriginal people into mainstream Canadian society. And there was a feeling that the best way to do that would be to start with the kids and to take the kids out of their homes and to strip them of their language and culture and take them to these boarding schools where they could be educated.
Taking these children away from their parents at the age of 5 and keeping them in institutions until the age of 17, which was the law of this country for over 100 years, resulted in children being raised in institutions. They had very limited access to their parents. They didn't see them on an ongoing basis. You can't be raised in an environment like that and be able to function as a parent, to be able to function as a member of society.
It was aggressive because they took kids away and forced them to leave their families. You know, you hear stories of kids who grew up on the trap line and then all of a sudden they're 6 years old, expected to speak English and beaten for speaking their native language and forced to live away from their parents for the majority of their lives.
When it came time for us to come back to our community, we were standing at the train station and we didn't know who to watch for. I mean, who was this person? Who was mother? I didn't remember my mom. I didn't know who she was. I had forgotten everybody.
The last residential school closed in 1996, and it actually, you know, it was about half an hour away from where I grew up. I grew up on the Okanis First Nation in Saskatchewan, and the residential school that was the last one was the Capel Indian Residential School in LeBret, Saskatchewan. And the residential schools themselves were government-funded schools, but they were often run by churches. You know, now that we have seen the release of so many documents from these schools, you see that there were so many issues from the beginning in terms of the inadequate nutrition. The kids didn't have enough to eat. Kids didn't have everything that they needed. But outside of that, I mean, just outside of not being warm enough at night and not having adequate food, you know, there was also extremely disturbing abuse that so many people experienced while at residential schools.
I am here to verify we were treated like a herd of animals. I saw children shivering in their beds because of the thin blankets. I saw girls forced to eat their own vomit.
The Truth and Reconciliation Commission was actually part of the Indian residential school settlement. In the 90s, more and more survivors were coming forward and telling these stories of the abuse and the extreme abuse they experienced at residential schools. So part of the residential school settlement was the creation of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, whose mandate was to travel the country and hear from survivors and document their stories so that a true history could be recorded. Because for so long, people did not know about people's experience in residential school, and people didn't know about the levels of abuse and the kinds of horrors that children experienced while living there.
I began to miss my mother. Fear was building up. I am cold, hungry, but will be humiliated. No bar of soap in my mouth today for speaking my mother tongue. Oh, not today.
The government recognizes that the absence of an apology has been an impediment to healing and reconciliation. The government of Canada now recognizes that it was wrong to forcibly remove children from their homes, and we apologize for having done this. We now recognize that it was wrong to separate children from rich and vibrant cultures and traditions, that it created a void in many lives and communities, and we apologize.
As the daughter of a survivor, and both of my grandparents went to residential schools, I didn't find out about their experience until I was older. When I was in university, I was taking an Indian studies class. I thought, I'll interview my grandpa because he has a story that I could, you know, use for this class project. And I lived with him for so many years growing up, and we were so close. And I started interviewing him, and it came up that when he was 6 years old, he went to residential school. And he stayed there until he finished grade 8. And he didn't want to talk about what had happened or anything. But the one story that he did tell me was about how he was very close to his grandfather, and that when he was 6 years old and sent to residential school, that his grandpa died. And he said how he remembered... crying underneath his staircase in the school, and he wasn't allowed to go home for the funeral. The final event that was held for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission was actually the first event that I went to, and it was a really odd thing because I was apprehensive about going there because just knowing the impacts that residential schools have had on our communities, I was apprehensive about hearing those stories. I find them extremely, like everyone, extremely difficult to hear.
What took place in residential schools amounts to nothing short of cultural genocide.
So when we were in Ottawa in the ballroom before the commissioners were about to speak, they played this video testimonial from survivors who had given testimony. And one of them was a man, and he was probably, you know, 50 or 60 years old, and there are tears streaming down his face. And he said,
"And I used to look at the stars, and I used to think, my mom and dad are seeing the same stars I'm looking at."
And he says,
"I really, really was...
I was so alone. I was so lonely." And that reminded me of my grandfather and his experience in residential schools. And even though, I mean, there are so many terrible stories about the horrific abuse that people experienced in residential schools, but there was something about that man just just feeling so alone and feeling so lonely that you know, I feel like it just really, it really stays with me.
The magnitude of the problem is there is not one Aboriginal person in this country who has not been touched by the residential school experience. It's that simple, whether directly or indirectly.
I think that anybody hearing these stories of survivors and the horrible abuse they experienced would find that difficult. But because my dad went to residential school and both of my grandparents went to residential school, it adds this layer of complexity to it that made it really difficult to hear these people and to imagine people you love being in the same situation.
I hate you, residential school. I hate you. You're a monster, a huge, hungry monster built with steel bones, built with cement flesh. You're a monster built to devour innocent Native children. You have no love, no gentle atmosphere. Your monster eyes glare from grimy windows. Monster eyes so evil. Monster eyes watch and terrified children cower with shame. I hate you, residential school. I hate you. You're a monster. I hate, hate, hate you.
Most people will say, when are the Indians going to get over it? When people get the impact that we've suffered through residential schools, the Indian Act, and the cultural genocide, they'll be more open and tune to bring about real reconciliation.
As a journalist focused on telling stories from Indigenous communities across the country, those aren't stories that I can separate myself from because I'm Cree. I grew up on a reserve. My family still lives on the reserve. These are things that are happening to my community and to my family, so it's not like I can have the same level of distance that maybe if I wasn't a Native journalist covering these stories, I would have. So I think that really, that helps me as a journalist, like in terms of having the context and the understanding to help tell these stories in a sensitive way. But also, I think it's so important for Canadians to understand that the effects that people are still experiencing from residential schools, we're still feeling those effects in communities now. And it's evident now when we're talking about contemporary Aboriginal issues, when we talk about murdered and missing Indigenous women, when we talk about the child welfare system, when we talk about poverty and communities that are struggling, there's absolutely a link back to people and their families' experiences in residential schools. It wasn't just what happened in residential schools. It's everything that happened after that.
Reconciliation is a really nice word. And apologies are really good things that happened 8 years ago with the Prime Minister apologizing. But the apology is really going to be empty and meaningless without action.
Backstory is recorded and produced by Cecil Fernandez. For more stories from our correspondents, visit cbc.ca/backstory. I'm Connie Walker.
For more CBC Original Podcasts, go to cbc.ca/originalpodcasts.